It's a bit spooky here, isn't it? Whose stupid idea was it to come up here?
Well, I've never been here before, have you?
Might have done.
Are we safe?
Once or twice.
Are we safe?
Well, legend has it that if you hear the crunching of a leaf or the breaking of a twig, you run like hell. But other than that, we're perfectly safe. Yeah.
But there's some weird buzzing noise coming from over there. And God knows where we are. We're sat in this very strange, peculiar place with lots of wooden carvings. And
to make matters worse, today is solstice day. So yes. It's the longest day. But here we are at 20 past seven, and it's there's not a lot of light, is there?
Well, there's enough light, but when this light does go down a bit, I think it's going to get rather spooky here.
Yes.
And that does worry me, because this particular location, I don't know the way back.
And, no, I do.
And yeah, it's a bit spooky. Hello and welcome to another Hidden Wiltshire podcast. This is Hidden Wiltshire podcast number
43
and still going strong. Actually, we haven't been around for a couple of months because we're kind of doing these ad hoc now, but we are back, and as usual, it is I, Glyn Coy, the person who started this Hidden Wiltshire thing years ago, and with me today I have
Paul Timlett
and
Elaine Perkins.
Hurrah!
So we are back, and we're out on location again, doing this as an outside recording on summer solstice day. So the 21st of June, 2023. Lovely evening, actually, although we are in the shade.
We're in the depths of Groveley Wood.
Isn't that supposed to be haunted?
Yes. Well, that's all nonsense, isn't it? Of course it is.
Well, you say that, but I'm going to be like an old Jesse when I'm walking back to the car and it's dark later.
Yeah, it is a bit further than I remembered. It's a bit further than I thought it was.
He's like, oh, it's only 20 minutes from the car.
Yeah.
Three hours later.
I meant 20 minutes from the top of the hill. Down a Roman road.
Oh, my goodness me.
I've just noticed, have you seen the size of that chain, that saw there, that circular saw?
Don't say that.
That's huge.
That's like... Oh. If
you do hear any buzzing, then...
Yeah, it would be part of the Groveley Chainsaw Massacre. There's a new movie.
Yeah. Well, there's a book about Groveley murders.
There is, yeah. Which
murderers as well. Yeah, oh, God. Yeah.
And I have stories as well, other stories. But we are sitting at the little woodyard that is, I say the home, but the workplace of Jerry Faithful, who we've talked about before on the podcast. And this is where Jerry weaves his magic. There's just most stunning carvings all around us, and we're sitting at a table and a couple of benches that he made, and a little pergola and a plastic pigeon sitting above our heads, which fooled Stu and I a couple of years ago into thinking it was a goshawk until we got here and found out it was a plastic pigeon. But yeah, we are allowed to sit here and do this. We have permission from Jerry, he said before. This is what he made it for people to rest. And
it's very homely.
It is. It's lovely, isn't it? Beautiful.
But I don't know how you'd ever find it, though.
No, unless you happen to just... I mean, a lot of people do know about it. And a lot of people, local people in Wilton in particular, know Jerry Faithful because he's lived in this area for all his life. And I'm not going to say how old I think he is because that will insult him if anybody tells him what I said. But, he was actually born in a cottage that direction, and I'm pointing southwest from where we're sitting, which is now sadly gone. It got bulldozed by whoever owns the estate here. So I think Jerry lives in Great Wishford or Wilton there, one of those.
Right. Yeah. So does he drive up here? Has he got
And his tractor. So if you look at you look at the blog I did about, I think it was called Groveley Wood and the Woodsman or something like that.
Oh, yeah.
And there was a picture of Jerry on there, which he was over there, and his tractor. It's a really ancient, very small tractor. It's an absolute cracker of a machine. And, yeah, he trundles back to, I think it's Wilton, in that thing, which at an average speed of about 5 miles an hour must take him a very long time.
It's a scenic route, anyway.
Yeah. Yeah, so that's where we are, yeah.
And okay, but as normal on these things, we do a bit of a recap of what's been going on in Wiltshire since the last podcast. Now, when we used to do these recaps, we'd only have a gap of, well, at the start, 2 weeks.
2 weeks, yeah.
And then it was a month.
Yeah.
And now it's two months.
It's a year or so.
So by the time we get to talking about the main topic tonight, we'll probably be about 3 hours in.
Yeah, I think we probably, as you said, Elaine, we probably ought to canter through some of these.
Yes, yeah. I guess some of these.
There's a long list there, but we don't need to talk about them all. And I have another one from today, another exciting one from today. Where should we start? Pick out some of those.
So you've got Orr House on the list there. That's interesting.
Yeah, it was the open garden.
Yeah,
thing,
so Wiltshire Museum. It was David Dawson's idea to do this, and we talked about it last year. But it was combining a walk around Orr with the time when the gardens were actually open at Orr House, which happens twice a year. Now Orr House is owned by somebody whose name escapes me. Keswick, is it? Part of Jardine Matheson.
He was the chairman of Jardine Matheson, which is a Hong Kong trading.
Yeah, yeah.
Company.
So this is a billionaire, basically. Yeah. And he owns Orr House and the grounds, and they open the gardens up twice a year. And on this particular day, David wanted to combine a visit to Orr House with a walk in the local landscape, looking at some of the scenes that Revilius painted when he was staying at Orr House many years ago, because he was commissioned by the then owner of Orr House, who was a conservative politician or something. But
the current owner is a huge donor to the conservative
party.
Yeah. So,
but this guy commissioned Revilius, and he did. There were four paintings that we looked at in terms of the scenes. And actually, there is another. We're doing a repeat of that walk on this coming Sunday, the 25th, but it's sold out. And it sold out immediately.
You didn't tell me about it. It was sold out. I didn't even know about it.
There was a waiting list from the first one that went as soon as it was, before it was even put on the website, the second one had sold out.
Can't become a staff or something.
No. Yeah, you could actually. You could, yeah. Yeah, you can tag along if you like. But it's about a 6 mile walk, actually. It's quite a nice route. You sort of go, we start off in Huish. Is that how you say it? Huish.
Well, that's how I say it.
Or Huish. I was calling it Huish at one point, but it's Huish.
Huish.
And you sort of go up to Gopher Wood, and then you go across the...
So you go past the giant chicken?
On the way back you do, yeah.
Oh, on the way back.
On the way back. You go through that garden.
Yeah, yeah. And the deer, back. Do you see the deer have never moved in years?
Yeah.
Which certainly fooled me.
But yeah, and then you go along the top, and you head over towards Martinsale Hill, and then come down into Orr.
And it's a lovely route.
There's a couple of landscape paintings he did from the top there, and he did a couple down in Orr House itself. One is called the Strawberry Nets, which is now where the compost pits are in the house. And also he did a painting of the back garden, which looks out towards that interesting building, the summer pavilion that they built.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And go on, I bet you can't remember the name of the architect.
Mr. Pei?
Yes, I think it's... I remember
I.M.
Pei.
Pei?
Yeah. Pei, yeah.
The guy who designed the pyramid and the Louvre.
That's right. Yeah.
Apparently that's his only building that he's designed in the UK, that. But
really?
Yeah. It must have cost him an absolute fortune. But when the garden's open, you can go and walk right up to it and have a look through the windows.
Well, I'd never seen it so close up from when I saw your photograph on, it must have been Facebook. Yeah. I've seen it from the hills. You look down, you see that incredible sort of pavilion.
You can see it from miles around.
What on earth is that?
How on earth they got planning permission, I'll never know. But something to do with being a billionaire
and a donor to the Conservative Party. That helps.
Don't say that. We'll get complaints again.
We will. Another complaint.
We get complaints about two things. One is being too political, and the other one is saying nasty things about Swindon. So
there's still time.
Oh, dear. And of course, at that time when we did the walk last time around, that was the bluebell season. And
yeah.
We went up into Gopher Woods. And it was quite funny.
Fabulous, isn't it, the bluebells up there?
Yeah, I went up on the walk. And on the walk, actually, David Carson came along. David's a friend of ours who lives down in Alton Barnes. and owns the farm, or his family own the farm around Milk Hill. But he came up, and I took him into Gopher Wood, and he said to me, I'd never been in here before.
What?
Said it.
It's on his doorstep.
It's on your doorstep. The bluebells were fantastic.
Yeah.
And the bluebells in the woodland around Orr House were really good. And they have fritillaries as well, which was really nice to see.
Superb.
So, what else have we been doing?
Right.
I've been out along Shire Rack. So, I've been sort of navigating my way towards the borders with other counties. But the Shire Rack is actually a path that is actually on the border between Dorset and Wiltshire.
Oh, it's a path. I never heard of it. I had no idea what you were talking about.
That's right. And it goes through the whole of Chase Woods. But we tend to park the bird sanctuary nearby and just walk up the Shire Rack, and then up, our walk has been up towards the Oxdrove. And you can see many birds as you're walking along, and it's a truly lovely walk. There's very remote, so it feels a little bit different than a fair bit of Wiltshire. And when we were reading up about it, we found that there's only two farmsteads or three, I think, and no churches, no villages on the walk. So
no churches.
No witches' marks. We saw some witches' marks, but no churches. And looking up one of the churches, one of the farms, was Westchase Farm, and we found out that there was links with Jack the Ripper. In you wouldn't believe that you're in the middle of nowhere and you find a...
Oh, we are now, aren't you?
Jack the Ripper, and we were in Groverley Woods, the wood of the murderers.
Trees.
It's just amazing what you can find. But there's a lovely walk, and lots of... there was a hill fort along this border area, probably built to sort of defend the border, and an old Saxon dew pond called Wormere. So there's a few interesting different things to see, and lots of lovely views across the Wiltshire countryside. So that's Shire Rack and
the river. That was a good one.
So what have you done apart from
been in France for 6 weeks? So nothing really, apart from breaking my wife's ankle breaking her own ankle. I'm looking at this list, what have I done? Nothing. I did do... Oh, there. Well, I mentioned that one at the end. I did. What was that?
National Trail.
Oh yes, yes. You found this, didn't you, Glyn? On Twitter.
Yes.
There was it was on Wiltshire Day, which I'd never heard of, but I gather there is a Sussex Day and there are other.
Yes, it's a county day.
So, which was June 5th, and you found this thing on Twitter, and it was the Thames Path National Trail Twitter account, or whatever you call it.
Yeah.
And they were talking about the blog that I wrote about the walk that Stu and I did up at Inglesham Church around there. So I immediately got my lawyers involved, because they didn't get my permission to tweet about this, but they were obviously saying, you know, go and follow this if you want to do a walk up along
you got more credit.
Yeah, even my name was mentioned.
I noticed I was credited on something on Twitter recently, and they referred to me as Wiltshire historian Glyn Coyne. I thought, oh God, what have I done
now? Not archaeologists, then.
No, at least I'm not an archaeologist. No, so now I can upset historians as well as all the archaeologists.
But can I just mention that last one there?
Yeah.
A bit of an update. So anybody who remembers the Imber blog I wrote, which I think was the subject of something like Hidden Wiltshire podcast number two.
Number two it was,
It was very early on. And after that, and I won't go into all the story, but there's a guy called Alan Dodson contacted me, his family were posted to Warminster in the war when Alan was a boy. And he remembers going out to Imber doing deliveries with the grocer boy from Warminster. And on the way back, they used to go to what he called Auntie's Cottage. So Auntie must have been, because everybody's called Auntie then, every woman that you knew, who was when I was a kid in Sussex, you know, all the local women were called Auntie this and Auntie that. And he just remember goes to Auntie's Cottage, and she used to feed him and the grocer's boy up on their way back in the van to Warminster. And Alan asked me if I could help him find the cottage and where it was. And I spent about 2 or 3 years trying to find this cottage, and I keep throwing candidates at him saying, Alan, do you think it could be here? And he said, no, it doesn't sound right. From he said, I just remember going up American Road from Imber towards Heytesbury and then turning right and pored over maps. And then last week, most people would have heard of Operation Nightingale, so the veterans charity.
I saw they're up in
Richard Osgood.
Yeah, Richard Osgood, yeah.
So they're doing a dig at Imber.
Yes. Yeah.
So they've been giving updates on Facebook. So I put on there as a comment about Alan's story, and I said, you know, does anybody got any ideas? And straight away, two people came back with the same location and said, have you looked at Knoll Cottages, which happens to be right next to Bowles Barrow out on Imber Road. And I've been to Bowles Barrow when I was doing some work with Natural England. So we were allowed to go out there. We were doing, and I remember walking all around there, and there's a reservoir next to it in the trees. But, of course, I didn't know about Alan Dodson, and I didn't know about his search for the cottages. And then somebody sent me a link to that. Is it Know Your Place, that website with maps? Yeah. And I don't know how I missed it, but it was the 1896 to 1939 OS map. And sure enough, there is marked Knoll Cottages, and there's a series of cottages. And it's pretty much bang on as Alan described it. So I emailed him a couple of days ago and said, Alan, do you think this could be it? Now, bear in mind, Alan must be in his 90s by now. But he was, you know, certainly when I spoke to him on the phone, he was, you know, he was all there with his gumdrops. He was very, very alert and very bright. Very, very clever man. He was an engineer, I think. So I'm hoping that I've got back to him in time, not being morbid about this.
Yeah.
And they'll say, yes, that's it.
Right.
So, And well, if it is, I try and wangle, because we're about to do some more mammal surveys with Natural England, and maybe we can go and do some out of Bowles Barrow.
That would be interesting, actually. If you can square the circle on that, we could get that in the press. That's a really
interesting
story.
That's what I thought. Yeah, it is. Yeah. It's a lovely story, and I do hope that you know, he's still with us and he's actually seen it. But, been a bit of a saga, this.
Yeah.
A bit of a journey.
So I've done a couple of other things up north. North Wiltshire.
You can't talk about... Oh, right. Your trip to Yorkshire.
Yes.
You can't talk about
Yorkshire. No, not that far north. I'm talking, you know, Swindon, places like that.
God.
So I went...
Somebody just had to go.
I went to Wotton Bassett, Royal Wotton Bassett, to do a talk to the library there. And it was very well received. And actually, from that, I got contacted by the Royal Wotton Bassett History Society, who asked me to go and do a talk as well. So that's quite interesting.
And is that, I think I've asked you this before, is it the Blind House talk? Or are you
I'm doing the Blind House talk because it's just my thing now. Mr. Blind House.
It's the only jokes you know, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, I'm doing the Blind House talk. But at the library, that was just a general talk about Hidden Wiltshire. So actually, because it wasn't a projector or a PowerPoint, it was just some folks in the library, I took some prints of some photos from the website and talked through various things, and I showed the book as well and showed some photographs from the book.
It just happened to fall out of your rucksack.
Just happens.
There's a few left to get more.
Yeah, just happened to drop into the conversation that they were for sale at a discount. Anyway, we managed to sell some actually, which is good. But yeah, it was a really, really well received talk. So I need to get back to them actually. I need to get back to the Wiltshire Libraries folks to arrange some more, because they were saying some other libraries might be interested in doing some as well. So I might do one in Salisbury.
Yeah, that'd
be excellent.
Yeah, and we'll see if we can sync up on those.
And get the museum to take our books.
Yeah, yeah. Although I think the museum's going through a refurb at the moment in Salisbury.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. I was down there today.
Yeah.
I just talk about today very quickly? I went to... And I'm sure everybody in Salisbury knows about it, but I found a new nature reserve down there, or Lane told me about it, Lime Kiln Down.
That's it.
Which is just fantastic. It's right up by the hospital.
Yeah. Right.
So the road you drive up to Oddstock Hospital, and as you're driving up there, it's on your right. And the number of times I've been up there over, I don't know, 20, 30 years, never knew it was there.
Yeah.
And the orchids are just stunning. Yeah. But the pyramid orchids, the pyramid animal, just thousands and thousands of them, and huge.
Yes, it's been good for them at the moment.
Well, not where I've been. It's been pathetic.
Well, that's because you lot have been doing dodgy land care, haven't you, over at Parsonage Down? You've screwed up all the orchids.
Yeah, I don't know. We just don't know what's happened up there. But there are pyramidals, but they're tiny. I think it's just a little bit early still.
I did see some big ones up in Battlesbury the other day.
Yeah, yeah.
Lots of them around.
Yeah, I'll see some pictures from there.
So, and the other thing I did up north is I finally got around to doing my write-up of Malmesbury, which I've been thinking about doing for about 4 years. So I went up there and spent a day there, and it was just when the weather had broken. You know, we had all that terrible rain. We had the first week of sunshine, and spring was just beautiful.
Yeah. Spring had sprung.
It had. Yeah. And we did a walk all the way around the town, through the rivers and the water meadows, had a good look around the abbey. It was just really nice, nice day out. It's a lovely little town. Tremendous amount of history there.
Yeah. Not least of which, the little known Wiltshire Tiger.
Exactly, yes.
The last one that was shot in 17-something.
Yeah. Actually, I didn't. When I did my write-up, I didn't include the tiger story, and someone pulled me up on it. And I thought, well, I've given you everything there. I've got a flying monk, I've got a king, the first king of England, a saint. What more do you want?
And a Wiltshire tiger.
And a woman killed by a tiger. Yeah. I mean, come on, just cut me some slack.
I do remember writing, I can't remember what I wrote about it, and I had somebody convinced that there were actually tigers in Wiltshire, and that this was the last remaining one, and it was the... You know, the sole remaining Wiltshire tiger, and that their favourite dish was the Wiltshire horned sheep.
Oh.
And of course, Wiltshire horned sheep, you don't see very many of them around these days, and that's because the Wiltshire tigers have eaten them all.
Yeah. But Malmesbury seems to be this place that just attracts all these weird stories. For me, the escaped pigs was the icing on the cake. Bonnie and Clyde. That was, I think it was in the late 80s or the 90s when some pigs were being delivered to an abattoir, and two of them escaped, went across the river and started hiding in the town. They spent a week trying to find these bloody things. And there was a big hoo-ha because the man who was selling them still wanted them to go to the abattoir, and they got rescued in the end and lived a long life.
A long and happy life.
Yeah.
Well, talking about the first week of spring, if you like, after all the rain, we decided to go to Mere on that week, and we considered a walk down south of Mere, because Mere again is another border area. They have the Wiltshire Downs meeting the Blackmoor Vale. So we thought we'd go south, perhaps rather foolishly, because it was still quite muddy and wet. And we ended up having to abandon our walk because we found one place where we couldn't get through because there was an electric fence across the footpath, or what appeared to be an electric fence across the footpath. And then in trying to get back, I sort of did a Vicar of Dibley moment going right down into the mud, covered my whole bits.
So I got that vision there.
Up to your knees in mud.
Never to be forgotten.
So I gave up and went back. But Mere is lovely, and it's got so many different things that we saw when we were just walking around.
I think Mere deserves a write-up at some point. There's a lot to see there. And actually brings us onto an interesting subject. It's a blocked footpath, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does, yeah. And I think I mentioned these guys in the last podcast, and you cut it, but if I remember rightly. But I'm going to make you leave. Yeah, knees must. It was getting a bit long. But a couple of friends of ours, Paul Whitewick and Hedley Thorne, have got a podcast which they do on YouTube as well. And what's it called? Wessex Ways or something like that.
Yeah, Wessex Ways.
And Paul Whitewick also does another podcast, a YouTube channel with his wife Rebecca, which has got a huge following. I mean, it's massive. And a lot of it is about ancient rights of way and railways and canals, and they're both very, very interesting. And anyway, with Elaine's experience with the electric fence, it got us chatting amongst the three of us about the number of blocked footpaths we come up against. And you posted a picture of the Coffin Trail, didn't you?
Yeah.
The Coffin route to West Ashton from
Steeple Ashton.
Steeple Ashton, that's it. I can say Steeple Langford. And a field of what looked like peas to me, completely impenetrable.
Yeah, I did get through it, but it was
you went onto the road.
No, I decided to push my way through. At the ground level, you could see the path. He left about that much, you know, a few inches.
Yeah.
But at head height, it all merged together.
Yeah, yeah.
So I just ploughed through it. Came out totally covered in green. All my clothes were greenified. You know, it was a disgrace, really. I mean, you can't leave a footpath in that state.
Absolutely not. And then the electric fence. I mean, there were very clear rules that farmers or landowners have to follow And they do. I mean, I came across an electric fence recently, just outside Shrewton, on Maddington Down, and you know the farmer had put an electric fence up to, you know, for grazing. Mm. But as I was there, he was taking it down to move them onto another area. So you can do it for I can't remember what the law says about how long you can keep it up for.
Right.
And sometimes you have to do it. And it was dead easy just to walk around the enclosure. They call it mob grazing, where they sort of put them in a in an area surrounded by electric fence. They graze it really quite harshly, and then they move them onto the next parcel of land. So that's what they were doing up there. And that's, you know, that's absolutely fine. But to, and I don't know, maybe what you came across, you might be doing the same thing.
Yeah.
Because electric fences, by their very nature, are temporary or normally temporary.
I think because it was so muddy, it was just that I had no other way around it at that time. Yeah.
But a field of crop, I mean, you have to. And there's advice, I can't remember who issued, it might be Natural England actually, give advice to farmers about how you keep clear. And you either don't sow down a stretch, and they tell you how to just, your machinery, so you don't sow, and I'm sure all farmers listen to this and will put us right. So you don't sow that bit, or you then, you know, cut it shortly after. You know, a lot of farmers, you know, quite happily leave people to beat a trail through it. And that may well be the issue with the trail you found, that it maybe that's an indicator of how little used it is. But the trouble is, if we don't use these things, we're going to lose them.
Yeah.
And of course, now the government recently they have this initiative to basically identify and register rights of way, historic rights of way, and they put a deadline and said, right, after 2031, you know, the books are closed, and if you don't identify them by then they're lost forever. So the Ramblers Association developed a tool and asked people to plot what they thought might be historic routes. Not saying they were, they're just saying these could be historic routes which no longer exist. So if you want to recover them and maintain them, then you have to show that they are historic routes.
And there
was a lot of, there was a big hoo-ha about this very, very tight deadline, and the government said, okay, we'll drop the deadline. And then the, whatever they're called, the CLA, I don't know what they call themselves now, the Country Landowners Association, they pressurised the government, and they've now reintroduced the 2031 deadline, which, as I say, is very, very tight. And if you go on the Ramblers website, I was looking at the routes that have been identified around Shrewton, and there were an awful lot of them, and there are people flying kites, isn't there? There's no question. You know, you look at sort of areas, and there's no way there was ever a right of way across there. There might have been in the 1500 and something.
Yeah.
But how far back do you go to, you know, ancient routes? I was talking to Paul and Hedley about this, and I think on their next podcast they're going to go big on this as well. And then we got onto rivers, and so I think in terms of the land, you know, you look at footpaths and open access areas like the one we're sitting in now, we've only got access to something like 8 to 10% of the land mass of England. I'm not talking about Scotland, because they have a right to roam. Mm. So in England, but with rivers and waterways, there's even less. You know, we've only got access to 2%.
Yeah.
And Hedley is about to walk, and I think he might even be doing it now, the Test Way, which I walked a couple of years ago, and did it with my wife and a couple of friends of ours. And we were horrified that the entire 3 days, I think we only got next to the river once for about 100 yards. You know?
Yeah.
The rest of it, the test is over there somewhere beyond that fence. And a lot of it was because of fishing clubs and riparian rights and all the rest of it. And I'm not sure that Hedley and Paul knew about that, so they were bristling with anger. So I don't know where that's going to lead. But we did think about maybe we sort of some initiative where we can, you know, we've got a lot of followers, they've got a lot of followers. You know, leaving aside the right to roam, which I believe passionately in, but I know that's very contentious. But just keeping our existing rights away and maybe recovering some of the old ones that have lost. So between us, you know, we could, you know, generate quite a lot of publicity. and you know, maybe we start to ask people to report
footpaths.
And because at the moment, you know, certainly in Wiltshire, they've only got 6 rights of way officers in the whole of Wiltshire, and I think 2 of them might be dedicated to Swindon, so they've got nothing to do. But no, they're lovely people. I've met 2 of them recently. They were shooting. They had a great time chatting to them. And they've just got too much on their plate. So I've got so many open cases with Wiltshire Council of footpaths that I've found that are blocked or illegally rerouted. You know, I've looked at the definitive map, and what I'm seeing on the ground is the, you know, it shouldn't be blocked. It shouldn't be rerouted. And not a single one of them has been dealt with, and I've had no response other than the automated response saying case number. And then a couple of them, 2 years later, you know, you get a thing, automated thing saying case closed. Well, what have you done?
Yeah.
Because
it's
still blocked.
Yeah.
So, but I mean, that's a big part of what we're about, isn't it? I mean, a lot of our blogs are walks, and a lot of people follow our walks. And I feel a certain responsibility if I, you know, do a walk and say you go and walk here, and somebody goes along and they find it's blocked, then you know, I feel a bit responsible for that.
So maybe we'll do something on that and watch this space, I say. So shall we move on to the main topic?
Have we got time?
Okay, so the topic for this month's podcast
is this episode.
Yeah. I was going to say, it's not weekly or monthly or bi-monthly. It's just this podcast.
This podcast.
This random podcast is Wiltshire's Woodlands.
Funny enough.
And we're actually sat in one.
Yeah.
By design. So the three of us are going to kind of give some indications or some overviews of some of our favourite woods, and there are one or two very famous woods in Wiltshire that we're not going to talk about, probably, like Savernake or Westwood, but you know,
but we are going to talk about 2 other very famous ones,
yes,
because they're favourites of mine, so I bags them.
Yeah, well, they're probably not as well known outside of Wiltshire. No. Savernake's well known, I think, nationally. Westwood is becoming well known because of its links to Stonehenge and the bluebells the rest of it. But some of these other ones, like the one we're sitting in here, Groveley, it's quite well known for locally amongst people.
Yeah.
Come up here to walk their dog. It's a nice place to get up to.
But funny enough, you were saying that this track we've came down tonight, you'd never walked down it.
Nope.
And it's one of the main drives through Groveley.
Not this
part
of it, no.
We were just walking along the Roman Road, though, weren't we?
Yeah.
So who's going to kick off, then?
So I'll kick off because my favourite wood is Bentley Wood.
Yeah.
It's a fantastic place to go. I love going there any time of year. The trees, the light, lots of things to see and do, lots of nature. It's particularly famous for its butterflies. Certainly the fritillaries are the thing, and the purple emperors. But you might get a chance to see the fritillaries, but very rare can you see the purple emperors because they're up in the canopy. But there's quite a lot of history to Bentley Woods. It's really been a wooded area right from early days. It was the royalties of Wessex in around 700 AD were using it for their hunting. It's probably when all the local woods in the area were joined up, so that would be a place called Houndwood as well as Clarendon Forest. So and a lot of the areas have names that relate to that, with the Houndwood being the wolfhounds that they would keep for their hunting. And Pitten, one of the villages, is named after an area for hawkers. So that's where they keep their hunting hawks as well. So there's a lot of history there associated with the royalty and hunting. Beyond that, the Normans and the Plantagenets also used the area for hunting. But then after that, I guess the king didn't really want to be able to upkeep it all it was probably getting quite expensive for the whole forest. So it then sort of got sort of partitioned to people who were actually stewarding the areas, and that's why you got a bit more fragmented woods, and then it remained a fragmented area from the New Forest. And going on from that, then the manor at Amesbury owned the woods, and because they wanted the forestry, the wood and everything for their purposes. So it's been.
They would use it as. They'd burn the wood, wouldn't they?
Yeah, they would.
At the abbey.
Yes, they'd. Yeah, because they didn't have a wood nearer to Amesbury, so I guess the king granted them that. And on from that, really, they've owned it right up until probably about 1800s, I think. It was associated with Amesbury, and then beyond that, the Singer family moved into Norman Court, and they were actually interested that they then put plantations in.
And that is Singer as in sewing machines, isn't
it? Yes, that is, yeah. So it sort of had quite a varied history, if you like, and it's a working wood, so they do still, if you're going round, some areas will be cut off, you can't go in because they're actually felling some of the trees, but it's kept by trustees now because finally it was bought by Lady Coleman. I think that's Coleman Mustards.
Oh, is she?
Yeah, she was.
I'd have made the connection.
I think so. I think that's right. And she then sort of wanted it. She bought it for the people, so that people could actually go and walk around the woods and enjoy it. And the trustees look after it.
Do we know why it's called Bentley?
I don't know.
This is an interesting
somebody
question.
Somebody asked that.
Because all of these woods, some of them have got really quite exotic names.
Yeah.
But trying to find out the origin of that name is lost in the midst of time.
Somebody asked, because we did a joint blog, didn't we, I think?
Yeah.
I wrote it and gave you a load of photos. Yeah, that's right, because Stu and I did a walk down there. And because I got hold of the... Yeah, and I did the walk partly because you told me about it, Elaine, but also my wife had picked up a copy of the trustees had written a book about it, Friends of Bentley Wood or whatever, and she found it in a charity shop somewhere for a couple of quid, and it's a really good read. So I did the blog about it, and then somebody asked in the Facebook group, you know, why is it called Bentley Wood? And started looking around, and you looked around, and none of us could find. No idea. So who was the royal? It was a queen who was she the abbess at Amesbury. And I think she buried there. What's her name?
Eleanor
of Aquitaine.
Yes,
Eleanor of Aquitaine.
Yes.
So she would have been effectively the owner of Bentley Wood. It's all in the blog. I've slept since I wrote that. So.
Yeah, well, I think there's a clearing in Bentley Wood as well, which I think was Ella of Salisbury and William Longesby, the legitimate son of Henry II or something.
Yeah.
He wanted to build a monastery there, and so that's what he was going to, you know, pile his money in to get his transport to heaven, I suppose.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, he did die before that. But he had had it all cleared. So where Howe Farm is, so if you go round and you see it, this open area, there's a sort of like a circular walk round, that would have been where a monastery would have been, and then things would have been quite
different,
I think. Yeah. But instead, his money went to St Nicholas's Hospice in Salisbury. Mm. So yeah, it was linked with all the royals for a long, long while. Yeah.
What struck me about Bentley Wood when we walked through it was just how open it is. So here, certainly this part of Grovely Wood, very, very dense, I mean, it's, you know, you get in, even in the middle of the day, you get in some of the deep parts of the wood and it's almost dark in there, which adds to its sort of mystique, I suppose. But Bentley's really open, isn't it?
In places, yeah. Yeah, it's certainly got the... Oh, I mean, it was used during the war as well. So, yes, you've got the...
Well, the Forestry Commission took it over, didn't they?
They did.
After the war, yeah.
After the war, yeah.
And they logged it. And
yeah, so they probably did make bigger clearings. But yeah. But there are some denser areas that you can get into.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, off the main sort of wide area.
As you say, the light there is just fantastic. Yeah, and there are some certainly tight. Good patches for bluebells, aren't there?
Oh, it's fantastic at the... Yeah. At the top end, mm-hmm. in the north, yeah, probably was. So that Bentley, I think.
And your other one?
Yeah, I was going to talk a little bit about Chase Woods, because we do go there, not as often as we go to Bentley Wood, but it's, again, walking along the Shire Rack that runs all the way through Chase Wood, but I haven't actually gone the whole way through. But
just right on the border again.
Yes, so half of Chase Wood is actually in Dorset, and the other half is in Wiltshire. Yeah. Well, probably a little bit more than half in Wiltshire. But this was owned by, I think it's the Rushmore Estate.
Yes.
So, and Pitt Rivers.
Yeah, that's
so
right, yeah.
He cut his teeth on all his archaeology, because there's quite a few archaeological remains in the woods. There's the hill fort that I mentioned, as well as a few other tumuli. So he then, because of that, on his estate, he then learned how to more scientifically do archaeology. So he's been attributed to being one of the founders of that sort of thing. So, yeah, a very good area for different varieties of birds. And I was very delighted I could actually, using that app, the Merlin
app. It's fantastic.
For bird ID.
If you haven't got it, get it. And it's 90p or something?
I think $9.99. I think it's, you do
can't
have to pay a little
why
bit
I'll pay for
it.
That.
But, yeah, I thought I saw a marsh tit, but I couldn't believe that I had. But when it was singing, I got the bird ID, and I thought, and that, it's great to have seen those.
Because when we did the walk there, and you do see them around, but not that often, a pair of nuthatches on a tree, and we were really close to them, and they didn't seem at all perturbed. Mind you, subsequently last week, I saw two in the middle of Salisbury in Lizzie Gardens.
Yes, there are, and in Vicky Gardens.
Oh, really?
Yeah. They're all over the place.
Yeah, commons, mate. It's not in Shrewton.
So, your woods?
All right, I'll go next. Well, it won't surprise you to hear that I'm going to talk about Groveley Wood.
Having dragged us up here to this murderer's pit.
Well, not yet it's not, but there's still time.
I'm still looking at that chainsaw blade over there.
Yeah, I've never seen a... Well, it's a circular saw, isn't it?
Yeah, a circular saw,
That'll go through an entire tree trunk, that.
Yeah, it would.
But, Groveley is... I was trying to find out how big it was, because you look on the map and it's one of Wiltshire's biggest woods or forests or whatever it is. And I read something that said it was, and I've written it down here, 8.16 hectares or 20 acres. And I thought, it's way bigger than that.
Yeah.
And then I read something else. So that was the Woodland Trust. And then the Forestry Commission, you look on their website, it says it's 260 hectares, which is huge. And I don't think it's as big as that either.
No.
So I have no idea how big it is.
It's big, though.
It's big, yeah.
You could spend a day in here, I've done in the past, just wandering and exploring.
Easily.
And there's some lovely views you can find as well. I know when I was here a few years ago, I went over to Little Langford Down, where you get lovely views over the valley towards Langford.
That's
Little
right.
Langford,
But it's owned by the Earls of Pembroke, and good chunk of it is open access. As I said, where we're sitting right now is right on the very edge. So that track in front of us here is the border of the open access. That's open access that side, and that side is private. But you can get up to Groveley from a number of different directions. So tonight we've come up from Great Wishford, and there's quite a good sized parking area on the road out of Great Wishford. You can get up to it from Langford Lakes, as I think you did before, and Stu and I have done before. You can get up to it from Wiley as well, and then the other side, I think you can get up to it from, is it Dinton down south?
Yes, you pointing, can get to it from Dinton.
Yeah, Dinton, yeah. So there's all these sort of long footpaths. And just like the next wood I'm going to talk about as well, years ago people had the right to local villagers to come up here and collect wood to burn. And that sort of given rise to what's become quite famous now is the Great Wishford Oak Apple Day, which I was determined to go to this year until I found out I've just missed it. It was, says he, looking at his, 29th of May. It's on 29th of May every year. And I wrote about that. There's a blog I wrote about the Oak Apple Day, which I one day, I was telling Stu, I said, we've just missed it. He said, right, got to go next year. But they come up to Groveley Wood from Great Wishford to, and they sort of do this chant, and it goes back to the days when the local people came up to exercise their rights. And the Earls of Pembroke, who own the woods for centuries and still do, they tried to, and I can't remember when it was, many centuries ago, tried to revoke that right. And there were four young girls in Great Wishford sort of rebelled against this, and they came up and, you know, they did it anyway, and they came up and collected wood, and so I think the owners sort of backed down a bit, and it was only relatively recently, and I was reading tonight in my blog, and I've forgotten again already, that relatively recently the current Earl of Pembroke basically said, you know, that right will be, you know, will subsist for time, not time immemorial, it's quite a quaint phrase he used, time without memory or something like that. So it's kind of like cast in stone now, and that's what the Oak Apple Day is about. They come up and they collect wood and take it back down to the village. But, I mean, it goes, I mean, the history of the place goes way back before that. You know, I've written here, you know, Iron Age, evidence of Iron Age and Romano-British occupation. And then all the way up to, and Jerry Faithful, whose yard we're sitting in, he's a big fan of you know, the World War II history here. And the British and the Americans both sort of occupied the wood. And the Americans apparently hid aircraft parts up here, because being such a big wood and dense cover, any German aircraft flying over wouldn't be able to see it. And then, of course, along the drive that we've walked along tonight, there are, I think it's three bunkers where they stored the fuses for the bombs. And apparently they used to bring these things in and out through it's no longer there, the station at Great Wishford. And you can still see evidence of the station. There's some... It's unusual, but it's got a bit of a reputation as being haunted, and there's the very famous witch's trees, which, believe it or not, I've never actually been to, because they're down sort of the direction of Wilton, and I always come up from Great Wishford. And the witch's trees, there used to be four of them, and the origins of that is that back in I haven't written down the date. Why didn't I write the date down? There was an outbreak of smallpox in Wilton. I'm going to say it was something like the 1500s, 1600s, something like that. And there were four sisters, and they were newcomers to Wilton, and they were Danish sisters. So as outsiders, they were immediately blamed. They were accused of witchcraft and blamed for the outbreak of smallpox, which killed 130 people. And basically, they were bludgeoned to death and brought up to the wood and buried. And they were buried at a distance from each other, so that it couldn't come back together in a sort of witch's coven. And the story is that either these trees were planted over their graves, or the trees grew up from these graves. And there's also, and you go down there now, and there's certainly one of the trees just hanging with votives and little trinkets and things, and the others are sort of less so. But there's a story that Jerry told us, and he's convinced there's something very strange about them. And one of them blew down in a storm some years ago, and Jerry was asked if he wanted the tree to cut it up and use here in the yard, and he would, you know, sell the logs and what have you. And he refused. He said, "I'm not touching those trees." He said, not a chance. So they had to get somebody else to do it. But the other The other story, haunting story, is the ghost of the Burkham Woodsman, and there's kind of two different stories, and one is that this woodsman was either a poacher who was caught and hung up here, and the other story, which is completely different, was it was an artist who was accidentally shot during a deer cull, and presumably shot by an arrow, I would think. Mm-hmm. But the wood is supposed to be haunted by the Burkham Woodsman. But if you Google haunted Groveley Wood, yeah, there are any number of other stories. And there is that story about, you know, if you hear the crunch of a leaf or a twig breaking, then you should be seriously concerned.
Actually, it reminds me, there's a lady I've got to know over Twitter called Emma, who runs a brilliant website called Weird Wiltshire.
Oh yeah, yeah, I've seen that.
And she writes about all these weird and wonderful folklore-y type things. Yeah. Actually, she was talking about me doing a collaboration with her for an article on her website coming up, but I think she's written loads of stuff about Groveley and ghosties and things that go bump in the night.
I saw it today, I was looking at it, that one popped up.
It's paranormal meetings up here as well.
There's all sorts of, I mean, I've found trees out here and think, what on earth is that? And then things hanging from them. And
yeah, funny enough, I'm going to mention something like that when I talk about my
wood, aren't you?
Yeah.
But just quickly going back to the great Wishford Oak Apple Day, the brilliant, one of my favourite writers, Roger Deakin, who's sadly no longer with us, who used to live in East Anglia somewhere, and he came down to see the Oak Apple Day when he was alive. Obviously, when he was alive, he may still be coming down to see, I don't know. But he came down to the village, and because part of the procession is at dawn, they come up here and make a lot of noise, and so Roger slept in the wood overnight.
Oh God!
And he slept just you know, in a bivy bag, and he was behind a sort of a earth bank, and I pointed it out where I think the spot was as we were walking up. And in the middle of the night, he had sort of call of nature, or I'm saying middle of the night, very early morning, and it was barely light, and call of nature when he got up. And then this figure came down the road to the one we've just walked up, down the hill towards Great Wishford. And he called it, he described it, or the name he used was a wadwo. And I thought, is that a typo? But it actually is. Wadwo is half man, half animal spirit.
Oh my
God. That's how he described it. And this thing was walking down the road. And as it came down, he said, "Morning." And it was somebody from the village dressed up with his head. He's got like antlers and he's covered in oak branches and stuff. And he was all part of the ceremony. But I mean, Roger Deakin has, you know, spent a good chunk of his life sleeping rough and things. And it scared the bejesus out of him. But so the other wood is, again, not surprisingly, was probably once part of Groveley, and that's Great Ridge. And it's not the Great Ridge, it's Great Ridge Wood. I think it was also called, was it Chitlade Wood?
Could have been, yeah.
Something like that, yeah. Now, again, I was trying to find out how big it was, and I saw somewhere 718 acres. Hectares, sorry, which is blooming big. Bearing in mind, Forestry Commission reckon this wood is 260. Now, I'm not sure that's right either. But when I Googled Great Ridge, there's not very much about it.
No.
So I looked at the Wikipedia entry, and guess what one of the references is?
It's you, isn't it?
I found
your name popping up on Wikipedia more and more doing Wiltshire research. It's a bit like when you're searching for something in Wiltshire, when the first thing that comes up in Google, it's a hidden Wiltshire article.
Absolutely,
and we're like the definitive text on X, Y and Z.
Because in the body of the article, the Wikipedia article, I was reading it and I thought, I've read that somewhere before. And I realised I'd written it. So they've completely just, you know, what do they call it? Plagiarism. They've just cut and pasted what I wrote in my blog.
Yeah.
And that was to do with W.H. Hudson, which is another favourite author, who wrote a beautiful book called A Shepherd's Life at the turn of the 19th, 20th century. And the W.H. Hudson spent a lot of time in Great Ridge, it was a favourite spot of his. And again, it's that story of the people from Fonthill Bishop, because it is owned, it's still owned by Fonthill Estate.
It is, yeah, yeah.
And it, unlike Groveley, most of it is private. So there's no open access areas, and there's a few trails go through it, and it is really dense wood, and it's heavily, you know, they it is forested. I mean, they do cut the timber, but also it's for shooting and hunting. So it's all blooming private. But the people of Fonthill Bishop used to have this right to go up and collect wood, and that was that right was taken away by the estate. You know, sent well, I think 19th. Actually, up to the 19th century, they could still take. W.H. Hudson said they were still able to take wood. So sometime after that, that right was removed. But as this wood, we've got the Roman road that goes through it, and it's the old lead route from Old Sarum to Charterhouse and on Mendip, where the lead mines are, and that road continues on through. Great Ridge, so there is quite a, it's not quite as wide there, but there is a long straight road through Great Ridge.
There is,
which is that Roman
road.
You
can see on the OS map how it all links together, and it kind of peters out as it goes towards Pertwood.
That's right, but there's, again, you know, hauntings. There's, I think W.H. Hudson wrote about this as well, the because it was a coach route as well, and there's the story of Jack Hagg, who was a highwayman. Who used to plunder coaches in the late 18th, early 19th century, and they chased and caught him up there, and then they hung him from a tree in Great Ridge somewhere. And you think this is spooky? I mean, I've been up Great Ridge on my own, certainly very early morning, and that's quite eerie up there.
Well, they've got all sorts of weird earthworks up there. They've got a Grimm's Ditch, haven't they?
There's Grimm's Ditch up there. But they've got some great names. I mean, they don't name that I absolutely love. Snail Creep Hanging.
Oh, yeah. Snail Creep Hanging,
I mean, what
on
earth is that? So, but of course, it's now a beer, and a bloody good beer. There's a new brewery just started up at Fonthill, at the estate. And Stone Daisy Brewery, they're called. Bit of advertising. But they do a Snail Creep Hanging beer, and they do one called Cow Down, which obviously there's a few Cow Downs in here. But it's stonkingly good beer. Again, access. I normally go into Sherrington along the Wylie Valley, and then there's a track just where that road that goes up the little road that goes up the Wylie Valley crosses the railway bridge, and there's a track on the apex of the bend, and I go up there, and there's a quite a small parking area.
Yeah, that's where I go as well.
Yeah, I normally walk up there, but you can also get up from. Well, say apparently I've walked down back through Corton, and again I've written a blog about this.
Yeah.
As I said, so the Wessex Ridgeway up from Corton, but it also comes up from Hindon, so you can get at it from there. Trouble with Hindon, you've got to cross the A303.
Which is not to be recommended.
Suicidal, to be frank, you know. Great Ridge is fantastic. A friend of mine is a terrific bird photographer, has been sort of deep into the wood. He's done a bit of trespassing and gone deep in there, and he got caught by, I think it was the mother or the aunt of one of the brothers that run it, and he thought it was for the high jump, and she said, "Oh, I don't mind," you know. And she wanted to see his photographs, and she was fascinated. Yeah. But I think, you know, if you're caught by anybody else, then you'll get a stern talking to.
Yeah. Yeah.
So don't do it. Don't trespass.
Well, the thing about the Fonthill Estate is it is a massive working estate. It's very well maintained as well, actually.
It is pretty heavily logged up there. I mean, you know, on the footpaths and rights of way up there, there's a lot of markers with the OS grid reference on it, and it's I'm assuming that's a safety thing for loggers. If you get injured, you're never going to be found an OS point, and you can call for help. Anyway, those are my two favourite woods.
So I was going to I was going to talk a little bit about some woods that are near where I live, and the first one is Biswood, which is near West Ashton. And the reason I like this one is because Biswood is really where this Hidden Wiltshire thing all started. It was back in 2016. There's a little corner of the wood, and it was clearly planted up separately from the main part of the woodland. And I did find out that up until about 60, 70 years ago, that particular part of the wood was a field. It was agriculture. But the man who bought the wood at the time wanted to basically pull that into the woods. So he planted up these different trees of, I think it's field maple and dogwood and a few other types of species. Yeah. Mm. But the thing about them is that when you've had a good year of weather, when it comes to the autumn, the colours are absolutely astounding. You've got reds, russet browns, yellows. And I'd noticed it. I kept driving past on the A350 and glancing down and seeing these wonderful colours. So one day I just walked in the middle of the wood, put my drone up and looked down and thought, ooh, that looks quite nice. Yeah. Took a snap. And I was just thinking, you know, how many people would not realise this is kind of on your doorstep, this wonderful autumn colour. And I just got my imagination going about how many other hidden little gems I could go out and explore if I took my camera out with me and the drone, and that's how it all started.
Yeah. But that photograph you're talking about, that's it's certainly on the website, but it's on the first book?
Yeah, it's on the first book and the second book, actually. There are two different photos of it, but I was talking to a guy from Wiltshire Wildlife Trust, Matt Calloway, the other day. He lives locally and he does a lot of work in Green Lane Wood and Biswood. And he was saying, we're both agreeing, that year I went in 2016 and took that photo, the colour's never been quite the same.
It's an exceptional year.
Yeah. And actually, if you look at the information boards that Wiltshire Wildlife Trust have for the wood, it's got my photo on it. Credited as well. Oh. Good. But yeah, I let them have a few photos of that particular shoot. But they manage Biswood and Green Lane Wood as a sort of connected habitat with there's been some housing development in the area, and they've given over some extra fields as well to be kept by Wiltshire Wildlife Trust. But it's a fascinating place. But I think Biswood was owned by a chap called Gilbert, whose surname escapes me, but he gifted the wood, I think, in the 1980s, the Wiltshire Wildlife Trust. But in Green Lane Wood, which is the bigger wood adjoining it, the lady who gave that to Wiltshire Wildlife Trust before she donated it, she used to live in it. She had a shack in the middle of the woods and lived in it, and apparently wasn't too happy if people got too close. And there was a rumour that she used to get a shotgun out and pointed at people to keep them away. But it's not like that now.
Sounds like our friend Mark Wheeler, who's in a cabin down near Pool Shop.
Yeah.
Pool Shop. Where the fire brigade headquarters? Yeah. Potton.
Yeah,
Potton.
But she was a very eccentric lady living in the woods. But eventually she retired. She had enough and she moved down to Devon and gave the woods away. And it's now well used by locals for walking in. But the interesting thing about that is that in Green Lane Wood is a very well-established colony of Bechstein bats. And Bechsteins are really, really rare.
They make great pianos, don't they?
Yeah, they do as well. But Bechsteins are a wood-dwelling bat. And I've heard that there's only something like 2,000 or 3,000, maybe even less, in the whole country.
Wow.
And a big chunk of that number are in these two woods on the outskirts of Trowbridge.
Okay.
But the interesting thing about that is that up until, probably 5 or 6 years ago, there was an awful lot of house building going on in that area. And it's abruptly stopped because Wiltshire Wildlife Trust put a lot of effort into doing bat studies and things like that.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, the bat report came out. And now...
Finished.
That's it. The building's finished. Forget it.
Yeah.
No more planning permissions. But another wood that's nearby to these two woods is better known. It's Pickett and Clanger Wood, it's called. Clanger Wood, I thought that was a great name for a wood. I don't know where that came from. But
you're probably not old enough to remember the Clangers, are you?
Just the Clangers. But it's a great wood. And actually, I think it's that one's managed by the Woodland Trust. And I think it's listed in their top 10 best woods for bluebells, apparently.
Oh, wow.
It is good for bluebells, but it's very well used wood now. A lot of locals use it for dog walking. And they've expanded the car park and stuff like that. But the thing that interests me about Clanger Wood is it was mentioned in the Domesday Book, so it's got provenance back to 1086, the post-Norman period of
1086.
1086. That's what I was getting to. And but prior to that, it's listed as one of the last remnants of Selwood Forest. And Selwood Forest was this enormous Anglo-Saxon forest mentioned in the Anglo-Saxon Chronicles, actually, written by King Alfred. But it stretched from Gillingham in Dorset all the way up to Chippenham and was a physical barrier that was stretching across that part of Wessex. And some people have written about the fact they think that Alfred gathered his... before the Battle of Edington or Ethandun,
yeah.
He gathered his armies at a part of Selwood Forest, and then they marched through to Edington. But the night before they got to Edington, they stopped at a place called Eyley Oak. And no one really knows where it is, but there's some speculate that it would have been in Southleywood near Warminster. At a place called Robin Hood's Bower.
Mm.
Now, Robin Hood's Bower...
yeah, now we're talking seriously creepy.
If you want to find the creepiest place to go... After Furze Knoll, is if you go to Robin Hood's Bower as it's going dark, need nerves of steel. It's the creepiest place I've ever seen in my life. For a start, the actual bower is a circular embankment enclosure, which I don't think it's been excavated or dated, but it's probably prehistoric, going back to pre-Iron Age and everything.
Yeah.
But in the middle of this bower, the landowner has planted monkey puzzle trees. So that's curious in itself. Right. There's this just clump of monkey puzzle trees, and they just look weird, and it does strange things with the light, with the jagged leaves, and it comes through. You're just thinking, this looks unnatural.
Yeah.
And apparently it was Lord Bath who decided in the 1960s. Yeah.
Okay.
He said, I want to do something weird with Robin Hood's Bower. Let's just throw in some monkey puzzles.
Because he never did anything weird, did he?
No, of course not. but it is this creepy, creepy place. And when I went there, there was evidence of weird pagan rituals going on. There was a circle made out of wicker and all sorts of weird shapes. It just struck me as a place of ritual. You know, I could imagine it dark, people going up there in robes and doing all sorts of strange pagan rituals. And anyway,
it's not really that out of the way, though, is it? Because I mean, I went up there and with my wife, and we found it pretty quickly.
Yeah.
And there was people riding horses and all sorts of woods.
Yeah.
But if you went early morning or late in the evening,
I don't think people go there at night.
No.
But I think maybe, you know, that connection, that weirdness of the monkey puzzles, the connection with the past, the fact that it's a prehistoric enclosure, it kind of attracts people who are, you know, new age, perhaps pagan, that kind of thing. But it's not on the Furze Knoll level where people are hanging up dead animals' heads and weird stuff like that.
Yeah.
So that's my favourite woods anyway. So,
right.
I guess we can wrap up.
Yeah. Do you want to talk about that?
Yes, so walks for this year. So in the past, we've done these hidden Wiltshire walks with Wiltshire Museum. And this year, we've done something slightly different in that I wasn't really organised enough to come up with an itinerary. So David Dawson had an idea to perhaps do some walks linked in with an exhibition that's going to start in July, which is Anna Dillon and Hedley Thorne, who we've already mentioned on this podcast about the Wessex Ways podcast. But Anna is an artist and Hedley does aerial photography, and Anna very often paints scenes that Hedley photographs with his drone. So that's the link up. And they're doing this exhibition, which will be well worth looking at. But we've picked three walks which will have scenes from the exhibition that you can see on the walk. That's the idea behind them. And we've got three in the calendar, and if you go to the Wiltshire Museum website, you can sign up and go along to those. They should be quite interesting. I think we've got one in the Pusey Vale, one at Avebury, and one at the Westbury White Horse.
Right.
So yeah, should be good.
And that really is about it. It's just the usual stuff. Steve Dixon continues to provide music. So that one in the middle, that's a new one that he sent me a little while ago called Forgive. I picked it just because I liked it.
There you go.
Yeah.
And we might be saying no forgiveness for you if we get bumped off on the way back to the car park.
Especially if we go the long way back.
Yeah.
Thank you, Steve. Still some books left. The second book.
Yes.
I see a few people you've got a thing on the website now where people can say when it's back in print or something.
Yeah, you can. The first book's all gone, and I'll have to think about what I do about that, because with the changes in prices and things like that, it's not as economical to get them printed. But anyway, we've still got quite a few books, copies of the second book.
Yeah.
So, and if you buy one, it does help support us carrying on doing things like this. Yeah. And
keeps the lights on.
Yeah, keeps the website running, etc.
Pay for a head torch to see us out of here tonight.
Yeah.
And yeah, the usual show notes and stuff on the website and links and walks and all the rest of it.
Yeah, so I guess we'll be back sometime.
Sometime.
Sometime later on in the summer.
Yeah.
Don't know when.
No idea what we're going to talk about.
No, we're working out.
Yeah.
But until then, thanks for listening. Goodbye.
Bye.
Bye.